Nada!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Capp there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, Brock, 8:30, we'll get back to the Mariners. Plus, I have a little surprise quick conversation for you there.
Shoot.
What?
My phone's ringing.
It's ringing?
I got my phone. It's ringing. It's the beef processor. I tell you, for the first time in my life, I'm getting a cow processor.
I know.
Beef processed.
I'm excited for you.
How do I have to handle that during the break?
Yeah, you're going to have to wait on that.
I'm picturing like one of those things at a restaurant that tells you your table ready.
Yes, it's kind of what
happens. Done.
I've been waiting to see, man. When's this processing done? When can I come pick this sucker up? When can I load up my new freezer?
Yeah.
Yes. Exciting. Yeah. Sorry.
So I'm really into the Super League thing. We talked to you about this briefly on Thursday during Blue 88.
Mm-hmm.
This was the report that Andrew Marchand and Stuart Mandel had in The Athletic. I think it was Wednesday. And we talked about it on Thursday, and then I had the opportunity to have Marchand on Friday, which was great. He is a really interesting dude. I don't know if you know him at all. He was covered, the Mets as a beat writer with the Post, and then became their media reporter, and now is with The Athletic, still reporting on media stuff, sports media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of them coming together for this I thought was interesting. When we spoke about it, you know, you still have a lot of questions, which I totally understand. I do as well.
Yes.
But I want to play you a little bit of what we heard from him, because two or three things really stood out to me. The first is...
And by the way, the Super League, for those listening...
Yeah, sorry,
what
I should have set it up
What
better.
Is a Super League? What do you mean, Super League? It is what college football may get to, the 70 or so teams that will break off and be employees and have their own pay scale and their own
union,
collectively bargained
collectively
agreement,
bargains.
Their own union and everything else. So that would be the Super League that many have forecasted, frankly, 15 years ago. Salk, I told you, man, this thing's going to look differently at some point. These superpowers are going to come together because it's not a level playing field. How can we possibly level this playing field?
Mm-hmm.
In college athletics, make it as competitive as possible. So,
yeah,
this Super League term has been coined by some executives on the media side. And I guess some of the – I mean, did Marchand say they're already starting to talk to college presidents?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are college presidents involved in this. There's an NFL representative. Number two at the NFL is involved in this. Like, there's some real people involved. And there may even be some, as you suggested, Brock, some hedge fund money and some real money involved in it as well. So you put all those things together and you start seeing a system that absolutely is worthy of taking note. Why? So three things sort of jumped out to me. One was this.
I think the biggest thing that the takeaway after doing all the reporting that I found was these coming lawsuits and the impact they could have on college sports. Now, we all know about NIL. We know about the transfer portal. And we know that there's been talk about collegiate athletes, the amateur athletes being paid in the near future and already being paid in some degree. But these new cases, it could cost these schools billions, that's with a B as in boy, in fees and back pay.
That's the huge thing.
Sure.
Billions in back pay.
Back
essentially,
pay.
People who played pre-NIL wanting their share.
Like me, in my number 7 jersey that was in a Bon Marché. Doesn't even exist anymore. The Bon Marché.
Well, whether you agree with this, you know, lawsuit or not.
So they were selling my 7s in the Bon Marché.
You and I will disagree on how it
yes.
goes. But
yes.
that doesn't change that there are major lawsuits out there, and that does seem to be the way things change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why did the NFL make some of the changes to health? Well, because of the lawsuits over concussions.
Why did the transfer portal open? Because the Supreme Court unanimously voted 9-0 that you don't have a right to limit these people's work.
So if this is happening, Brock,
mm-hmm.
that would absolutely cause teams to make or cause schools to make a major change.
Mm-hmm.
The second is who's actually involved in this.
It's led by Len Perna, who runs Turnkey, which places basically all the athletic directors, including in your neck of the woods, George Kliakoff of the Pac-10 or Pac-12, but also others like Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti, etc. Who are with the SEC and the Big Ten. And so he's one of the leaders. The name that really caught my attention when I first heard about this around the Super Bowl was Brian Rolapp, who's the number 2 at the NFL. So if Roger Goodell were to retire, Brian Rolapp would be one of the first names, if not the first name, that people would say he's the next commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So both of those things are a big deal as well. If there is an Illuminati, right, concept, then don't you think the search firms that place all of the college presidents and ADs and especially commissioners, I mean, that's a major power broker.
It is.
And then obviously number two at the NFL, you don't get too much more powerful than that. So you put those two together, this starts to sound like it has some legs, right?
Yes. And I've often wondered, Salk, why would the company that I work for and now ESPN, ABC, and they're Disney's a part of this as well. These spring leagues, what are they all a part of? You know, 40,000 showed up in St. Louis Saturday to watch the Battle Hawks. Like, amazing. Like, the biggest spring crowd ever to watch this spring football. What have all of these entities, the Alliance, the XFL, the USFL, the UFL, what do they all want? They all want to partner with the NFL.
Of course.
They want to find some sort of congruency, some sort of, hey, let's work together on this. You know, let's find a path that we can be your minor league. We want to tap into this multi-billion dollar pipeline.
This has the NFL in it right from the start, which seems like a really, really big thing. And then the third, I don't think I have the sound of this here, but he did mention the boosters aren't getting any return on their investment, which makes sense. Right. If you're a booster and you're paying an ungodly amount of money to support
Miami,
the NIL system,
Texas A&M,
even if you're winning, even if it is at Alabama or at Ohio State and you're winning, you're still not getting anything back. And if I think about pro owners, right, what have they done over time? They don't just own the team and spend the money. Mm-hmm. They look for ways to get all of their investment back, whether it's through publicly financed stadiums or through the money they make back in television rights, et cetera. So these boosters aren't getting anything back. No. They're just spending money to help their favorite team do well. That's not going to last.
Which was always part of my, like, man, there's rainmakers, right? Every college team, there's 85 players. You're going to have a Caitlin Clark. She's an absolute rainmaker. She's going to bring back a return on investment 100-fold. But then if you're paying, you know, the 12th player on the bench or the 10th or the 8th or even the 2nd, may not. Stolke's a great player. But, you know, all of a sudden we can pay her all this money to go do it. And, wow, she's not selling. Like, our business isn't really capitalizing on this. Like, man, there's not many people coming out to this autograph show. Like, remember E.J. Manuel I worked with for a little bit? He was telling me a story when he was like a first-round pick to the Bills.
Yep.
Right? And, like, in season, this restaurant, like, paid all this money for him to come sign autographs. And they're, like, 2-7. And he's getting pies thrown at him. Like, this is bad. This is bad for me personally. This is really bad for this restaurant. Like, this is negative return on investment. Yep. Negative. So if you look at so many of these car deals and these, you know, clothing deals and these business deals and these, you know, money that these really smart businessmen and women have made over their years, they made their money, they've got extra to do this, they typically want to see a return on it, not a negative and not as net zero. So, yeah, that's not sustainable. And, you know, the big booster, Salk, at Oklahoma and Miami that have thrown tens of millions into the program and said, okay, yeah, money's going to solve the problem. Well, it doesn't. Doesn't solve it at the pro level in free agency. Certainly is not solving it at the collegiate level, you know, in some of these programs in the win-loss column and otherwise. So, yeah, this I don't, and I hope on Thursday when we hit on this, I don't want to just be head in the sand, like oblivious to all of this. There has to be, as I said to you, some level of constant and some level of competent change.
I think this is going to give you, give you a lot of what you want. Right? Because two of the biggest problems you have now in college football, especially, are the coaches jumping from school to school and the players jumping from school to school, right? Like, aren't those two of the biggest problems you got? Add to that scheduling, which is just absurd in college football. This could fix all three of those things. It really could. This could fix all three of those problems. And if you were to fix those three problems with college sports and, oh, by the way, throw out a lifeline for Wazoo and Oregon State, Marshan, I asked him about that specifically, and he said, yeah, they'd be included in this in the top 72, not in the 10 teams that would need to, you know, fight every year for relevance and not to get relegated. Gosh, there's so much positive here. I don't know if it'll work, and there are challenges with the media rights deals.
Yep.
But
and there's challenges to all the non-revenue sports, and there's challenges to those other 60 teams don't get invited to the party.
You could absolutely carve out something, though. I asked him specifically about the non-revenue sports.
Yes. I mean, there definitely could be a carve-out, but I think the way they look at it is they got to get football correct, and if you can fuel football and have, you know, the proper finances going into football, then You know, then you can figure out the rest of the sports. And, you know, basketball obviously is one where there might be some, you know, ways to structure it differently as well. But they, you know, the idea of these presidents and this group is that you need to bring more money into the system. If you're negotiating the TV deals as one entity, that'd be better.
So you could take a carve out at the beginning and say, we're going to take this amount for those other programs. And
you could.
I kind of like it. It's better than what you got now.
There's no common sense and there's no leadership now. And that's what I'll continue to clamor for and call for first and foremost. Don't kill the golden goose with this idiocy and this all these fiefdoms and all of the control and the power and the greed that we see now. Try to find some level of common ground, and that's hard to achieve.
All right, coming up next, we will give you guys everything you need to know, including a moment that I don't think we ever thought we would see. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it could have been an absolutely brutal weekend for the Mariners, salvaged at least a little bit by the win on Saturday, as Bryce Miller had one of his best performances we've seen since he was called up last year. He was dominant for seven innings, didn't allow a run, had the splitter working, Brock. Lefties did not get a single hit off of him in the game. All of those are real positives for the future with Bryce Miller going against a very good offensive club in a good offensive ballpark in Milwaukee. That being said, Friday, bullpen meltdown with Andrés Muñoz, Saturday and Sunday, just total mess from the pitching to the hitting to everything. Overall, it was not a very good weekend as they dropped 2 out of 3.
Yeah, not good. And, you know, it's 10 games and it is early, which does not placate your feelings and doesn't mean that it's okay, as you said last hour, and I second all of that. But you are sitting there at a minus 21 run differential. And that is second worst in the American League, only be better than the 1-8 really awful Chicago White Sox. So in some ways, you should feel fortunate that you won four games with three just nails, quality starts that have been a part of it. Luis Castillo is going to get the ball tonight. So this is not time to worry. This is not time to stress. There's going to be 30 plus more starts for Luis and the rest of these guys. But you'd sure like to see La Pietra turn it around. Yep. Like this is time.
Be the stopper.
Okay. That's right. You got to be the stopper.
Yep.
Got to turn it around. Get
what
a series. Get a win to start the series, so you can win this series and get home and be
and
right
he's
there.
He's got some
five
good memories from the near perfect game that he pitched there in the playoffs just a couple of years ago. The Munoz one was a little concerning, also seeing him melt down the way he did on Friday. Glad he was able to come right back on Saturday with a fairly clean save.
I hate it. We'd never seen that before. And a lot of close pitches, they just didn't swing. And I haven't looked at the whole inning, seen the replay on all of them. Some of them were right on the edge, some of them weren't. We've never seen that out of Mooney before. Like I said, he's usually on the attack and gets right after him in the middle of the play. Just didn't happen tonight.
All right, well, they'll continue to need these guys. As Brock mentioned, they are in Toronto for the first of three this evening.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, a huge congratulations to South Carolina. Dawn Staley and her crew finish off another undefeated season and take the women's championship yesterday.
Court finishes with 30 points. 6 seconds to go. Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
Yeah, it was a heck of a moment. It was a heck of a game. Gosh, who do you want to give the most credit to? Camila Cardoso, she was amazing. 18 offensive rebounds, or she had 8 offensive rebounds. Yeah. Those are 8 of the 18 that her team had.
Yeah.
She was dominant on the boards, had 17 rebounds herself. She was, in so many ways, the story last night, much more yesterday, much more so than Caitlin Clark was.
A couple years ago, Salky Macy played in the state title game, and she had a Caitlin Clark had an amazing other teammate, and Stolke played great yesterday and had a great Final Four. But we played a team in Grandview that had a 6'7 post who went to Stanford, now at UCLA, a 6'4 post who's going to UCLA, a really good 6-foot wing. And you're like, man, you know, we play 10 times. I don't know if we win one of them. And with Iowa yesterday, quite honestly, like if those two teams play 10 times, I know they started out brilliantly. It's why it was a competitive game. I mean, they started out on fire.
They were up Caitlin, double digits.
18 in the first quarter gave them a double-digit lead.
They hadn't done that. I mean, they got outscored by 20-plus after that.
Correct. You're just not. Their size, South Carolina's depth, and their strength, and all of it, man. It was
and they put it together, man. Like, what, 6'1", 6'2"?
She's a sophomore. Yeah, she's 6'1".
I mean, she's just not tall enough to hang with those girls. Wasn't even close. Anyway, it was a ton of fun to watch. This entire tournament, huge, huge props to Dawn Staley and her whole crew. Those freshmen were amazing. The leadership was amazing. The unselfishness was amazing. They were a great story, just as much as Caitlin Clark was a great story with her Iowa teammates. Ton of fun to watch yesterday with my daughter.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
And on the men's side, Brock has won the bracket here. Is that true, Brock?
I'm not sure yet. Well, I got to be a little careful.
Not official.
I mean, I think I did. I believe I did.
Okay.
I haven't seen the congratulatory email from Mike Lefko, who put this whole thing together, nor Kyle Brown. I mean, it's tough. You know, people love to hate. They love to see me fail on this. They don't want to see a football guy win a college basketball tournament. No, I get it.
Yes.
I mean, I totally get it.
Yep.
But did I have Purdue and UConn in the final? You're darn right I did.
No, you did.
Do I have UConn winning it tonight? You're darn right I do.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Humble victory. That's good. That's
well, you know, I think it, I hope that, you know, that it's, you know, the really good seat so I can treat the three of you with me, you know, to a nice Mariners game. I'm hoping that's going to be the plan. We'll see, though. I mean, Lefko's got to send out the official
email.
The season
was going to be over here in another couple days. No? They're still going to keep playing?
They're packing it in.
No. I thought they were packing it in. It's been 10 games.
It will be kind of fun tonight, I got to be honest. You said this resurgence of the big people. South Carolina has 6'7", 6'4", 6'3".
Yeah.
Right? Just size. Tonight, 7'4", versus 7'2". Like, two absolute giants in the middle of it for Purdue and UConn. It's going to be fun. This I don't know. I don't know if it'll rate as well as the women and help being on TBS. Do you realize the hotel we were in, by the way, down in Florida for this compassion event, which was amazing? We come back to the room after the evening festivities, like, let's watch the men. I'm like, huh, okay, well, yeah, not on CBS. Okay, whatever. I think it's on one of these, like, the hotel TV, 45 channels. Wow. Didn't have TBS. Couldn't even watch it. Couldn't even watch the game.
Yeah.
Like, why are we on TBS? Put it on CBS, please.
I said that earlier this morning. Everybody
and even
got
tonight.
Mad at me. I didn't even think to look for it. I didn't watch the games on Saturday because I didn't even know they were on.
Okay, well, but Brock had an option. Like, Brock didn't have an option. You had it on your TV and were like, I didn't want to have to turn on Max.
I didn't realize it was on at first, Maura. I didn't realize it.
Maura.
That's everything
you
need to know.
You missed it, Brock. He was being just very grumpy about the men's
side of the tournament.
I'm not grumpy about it. I don't have any interest in watching it. I find the basketball that they play to be abysmal to watch. I'm not interested.
Well, UConn, actually, you would enjoy.
No,
the men, they share the ball. They play with a winning mentality. They're unbelievably freaking tough and selfless. Okay. And, you know, you would actually like the UConn men.
Nope.
It's just getting through a lot of the other trek of threes and dunks.
I can't get through. There's no need. You know what? There's not enough upside to
fine,
get through
Salk,
that.
Fine.
There's not enough upside to get through that. Okay. Coming up, Brock, I have a little surprise for you.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Well,
something that needs to be said.
Oh.
Something that I need to tell you.
Oh.
And something that we'll do next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, why has the Mariners season started as poorly as it has? We'll discuss coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Brock, before we do, it's a little bit of a surprise for you, but I did mention it to you, so you should have a bit of a hint. And that is over the weekend, I guess on Friday, we celebrated 15 years of this station being on the air and you and I starting our show, Calabro that day as well. And just what a weird, cool, unique experience that was. I like to tell this story as often as possible because I just think it's hysterical. In 2008, I love setting the scene because it's really a miracle that this station is here. In 2008... I hope everyone remembers what sports was like in Seattle. The Mariners, as much as they're crushed right now for not spending a lot of money, did spend a lot of money. Spent $100 million and became the first team, that was a lot at the time, the first team in history to spend $100 million and to lose 100 games in the same season. That was 2008.
That's great.
That same season, the Seahawks went, I want to say, 5-11. And Mike Holmgren left. That was his last year. So there was turmoil there with the organization. That same season, the Huskies, how'd they do, Brock? They went 0-12. It was not a great year for the Huskies, unfortunately. The Cougs went 2-10 with a win against some directional school and against the Huskies. Not their best year either. And the Sonics, how did the they left. We thought, while the economy was crumbling, let's start a sports station in this town. What a brilliant idea. What this town needs is more sports stations.
Well, be careful
more
with the
sports
talk. Careful with the pronoun we.
Right, you and I had nothing to do with that. Zero.
You were, what were you doing? You were working overnights in Boston or something?
I was unemployed, mostly, desperately looking for a job. And they said, hey, would you come out to Seattle? I said, I don't know where that is, but sure. Yep. If there's a job there, I'll be happy to come.
I was just blossoming as a broadcaster, doing games in Appalachian State and Wofford and all over God's green earth. Division II and FCS and all sorts of great stuff.
So they brought this huge group together, and there were two shows. Kevin Calabro had his show with a rotation of various co-hosts. We had our show with Colin Paisley as our producer. Shout out to Colin. We texted the three of us on Friday as well, a little 15-year anniversary text. And somehow it worked. It's really amazing. The first year did not go well. Brock and I were not very good. Collaborator was adjusting.
I mean, did not get along.
Would you like to hear some of the sound from the first week of the show? I've got some here. It's not all us. Some of it's just other people and just things that we were talking about during that time.
Must we?
I mean, I always play the Brockham Sock'em because people are shocked that this was a thing.
This is Brockham Sock'em.
Just walking it out in the middle of the ring.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
That could have worked.
That was the intro.
I still feel it. That could have worked.
Where we would yell at each other about.
Man, if you would have bought in, so that could have worked.
If only. Yeah, that was a problem. We had a caller who gave me this advice on the first week.
Hey there. Welcome to Seattle.
Thank you.
Two pieces of advice for you. Don't come in hating on Ken Griffey Jr. Don't come in hating on Brock Huard. And don't come in loving Eric Bedard.
Yep. So we had that. Let's see. Matt Hasselbeck joined us a bunch of times, but specifically right at the beginning. Here's a little Hasselbeck from that week.
Well, there's definitely this big, big rivalry going on between the Huskies and the Cougs. That's, I don't know that you want to get involved.
Don't get involved. That was his advice. For me, I do.
Gosh, sound quality so high. I know. It's amazing.
I have some Colin Cole. Remember Colin Cole? He was a big part of the team.
Oh,
at the time.
Yeah, big boy.
Well, you know what? Contrary to what you may think, eating is definitely one of the priorities of my life on a daily basis. But
love that guy.
He was a good dude.
He was a good dude.
Ran into him at the airport in Vegas.
Do you have the best or only? You know, the nice.
Oh, that's not till years later. I'm just talking about the first week.
This is the first week?
These are literally from the first week of the show.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. No.
You had that time where I was nodding?
I don't know whether we cut that. I don't know whether that got cut for whatever reason.
Nodding along with you and you kept looking at me.
Do you recognize this voice?
I think the guys buying into each other, I think, was important. You know, one of the things we said all along is we wanted to change what was going on in the locker room. You know, I wasn't here, but I've heard all the stories. But more than anything else, I mean, to build winning teams, you got to trust the guy next to
you. Okay, you know whose voice that is.
That's Jackie Z,
right?
Baby.
That's Jack Sorensen.
That's the guy that you slept through.
I did.
Little morning meeting.
Yep, slept right through.
You want to talk about you two sleeping through more and Justin and singing songs.
Yep.
Oh man, we had a powwow with all the brass of the Mariners.
Slept right through it.
Oh no.
Yeah. Owen was so mad at me. Understandably.
Should have been fired right on the spot. Fire that man.
Was there a good reason?
No, just slept through it.
Just okay.
Just totally slept through it. Forgot and slept right through it.
All right.
How about this one, Brock? Could you name this voice?
It was exciting just to see guys out there, executing what we are teaching for the last 3 weeks here. And it was a variety of good things. I mean, Matt did not turn down a rep. He looks fine to me as far as his back is concerned and his energy and his excitement. Everything was good there.
Any idea who that is?
Is that Rusk? No, that's not Ruskell. He'd have been out.
Nope.
Gosh darn it. Who is that? I know that voice.
Yeah.
But I can't name that voice.
That's Greg Knapp, offensive coordinator of the Seahawks, our first season here. Oh. Greg Knapp.
Rest in peace.
That's right.
He passed away in a bike accident. Yes.
Is that true? Oh,
it
that's
is
sad.
True. A couple years ago. Yeah. I was, I believe, in Tahoe and got in a bike accident and bicycle and awful. But a great guy. Absolutely beloved. Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right.
So those are the types of things that were going on in April of 2009 when we first started the show. That's only the sound that I can find. I'm sure there's some more. But
that's great.
Yeah, how about that? Sam in Spokane says, I thought all the sound was deleted. Yes, a lot of it was by a former intern, Nat, who accidentally deleted all of the sound and slept through an entire show, which ran from 11 a.m. till 3 p.m.
Two tallest interns in the history of radio, though, between Nat and Kyle.
Yeah.
Like we had. You think we have length with Maura?
We had the Twin Towers.
Oh, my gosh. Those two stars.
So there you go. It's been 15 years, Brock. There have been some ins and outs. There have been some years we've stopped. It's not been 15 consecutive years, let's be clear.
Right.
But it was 15 years ago that we first started the Brock and Salk show. So
I remember when you guys started on the air at the same time.
You do?
Do you really, Justin? What do you think?
I was across the street. I was working at the rock station at the time. And I remember
so you were, what, 20? 21?
I was 21.
Wow. 21. Yeah. Thinking these guys are awful. Gosh, this sounds terrible.
Meanwhile, I'm playing like Limp Bizkit on 104.9. Making fun of you guys.
Maura, what were you doing 15 years ago?
Where
were
you?
What was life for Maura? Were you modeling?
2009.
2009? Oh, yeah. Goodness. I was waiting tables.
Waiting Colorado. Tables. Doing the modeling thing? Traveling the world?
No.
Done with that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Damn. Not listening to us.
No, that's for sure.
No, I don't think I had heard about the Brock and Salk show in Colorado.
No, it wasn't famous in 2009.
Had made its way there yet.
You know what? If you'd been here, you wouldn't have heard of it either, which would have been nice. It did lead to one of the most embarrassing moments, I think, of both of our lives, which was opening day that year. I think it was later that day, right? We like launched in the morning. It was opening day. Maybe it was a couple days later. I don't know. But we were invited out onto the field.
Oh, gosh.
In between innings. Oh. They were like, oh, we want to welcome the new shows for the new sports station in town.
Ooh, terrible.
And was Calabro out there with us, or was it just the two of us?
No, I think we went out.
I think it was just us. Yeah. Just, oh, my gosh. Nobody had any idea who we were, what we were doing.
Well,
I mean, they knew who Brock was just because he was Brock, but they didn't react in any way.
It was
so embarrassing.
It was a tough look.
It was rough. Awful.
Yeah.
We're like,
it was
kind of
like Kiss Cam. You know, it's kind of like Kiss Cam when you got two people that do not want to kiss each other and the camera like stays on them and you're like, okay, well, this is awkward.
Except for the entire stadium was the people that didn't want to kiss you.
That's
the
right. entire stadium had no interest in who we were.
Just like, a little quick wave and we'll duck right
what?
Back
look
in
how
the tunnel.
Far you've come.
I like 253 says,
yeah, now
it's still aren't that good.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thanks. Congrats.
Now instead of nobody knowing who we are, that we would just get booed, which would be, I don't know if that'd be better or worse. So anyway, that's 15
cool.
years. Happy 15 years,
guys.
Brock. Happy 15 years for the station.
What's the 15 year anniversary thing? Don't you guys know this by now?
What?
Like every year's got its own thing.
Metal. I think if you play some heavy
Judas
metal.
Priest. That's what
rock
it is.
On. I know you have to look that up. I'm not sure I remember, but if anybody was there, if anybody remembers, if anybody was listening in that first week or so, I feel bad for you, but thank you.
That's Crystal.
It's Crystal.
Crystal. Crystal Blue Persuasion. Maybe we'll play that a little
crystal
bit later.
Method.
Salky, to awkwardly transition, it's been 15 years, and in these 15 years have been some struggles for our hometown nine.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes, we've seen a bunch of rough starts. We see them get hot. We've seen some tough finishes. We did have an unbelievable run 2 years ago. There is no question that, quite honestly, I mean, the Super Bowl run, that buildup, you know, sustaining that success, going to the Super Bowl the following year, unbelievable. You and I said it. Like, man, of all of our years of doing this, we could feel the emotion coming back at us right through these microphones. It was the same way 2 years ago when the Mariners went on that run, when they went on that playoff run, when they went to Toronto where they'll be tonight and they beat those Blue Jays and they come home and they play the Astros and they play them unbelievably tough. It was the same kind of passion. But for 15 years, man, we've had a bunch of these just rough starts.
Yeah, it's amazing how many lousy Aprils we've had.
Yes.
And this one is up there with them. I got to tell you, this has been a really, really bad 10 games for the Mariners. Thankfully for them, they have won a couple of squeakers, which has allowed them to be 4-6 instead of 2-8. Thankfully for them, they haven't had any crippling injuries, right? And they got a couple of those wins in Boston or against Boston. But other than those two things, I feel like everything else that could go wrong through the first 10 games has. Just to kind of look through it, new emphasis on contact, ineffective. They're still striking out. Small ball, remember we heard they were going to play a little bit more small ball, find different ways to score runs? Zero. But also two, to throw a little ode to our guy, Russell, John Clayton. Mm-hmm. But also two, now they've limited their power, so they've only hit six home runs.
Mm-hmm.
The starting pitching, which was supposed to be like everything that this team is built on, has a grand total of three quality starts in 10 games, one each by Kirby, Gilbert, and Miller. Those are three of their four wins on the season, by the way. Mm-hmm. Their defense has been unspeakably horrendous. It's not so much the errors.
So you're not buying the fielding stats of them being middle of the road? Four errors in 10 games? Fielding percentage, like 12th in the 12th in baseball? You're not buying that?
Well, because it's meaningless. No, okay. I'm not buying it. Their fielding has been atrocious. It has been horrendous. It has been challenging to watch in every way. Yes, the errors aren't that many, Brock, but the non-error plays that haven't been made, I told you, I counted eight of them in one game last Wednesday. Eight
what
in
do you
one
mean,
game.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, a ball's hit two steps to the left of Ty France. It bounces off his glove, but because it wasn't placed into his glove, baseball doesn't rule it an error.
Okay.
Because he doesn't actually fall down on the play like J.P. Crawford and Jorge Polanco did a couple innings later, it's not an error. Baseball rules errors in like the most ridiculous way imaginable.
And they're so lenient today. The players of old got to be so pissed.
There's no errors in baseball. If anybody goes and complains, oh, no error, it's a hit. Everything's a hit. There's no more errors. Everything's trying to get people making sure
the batting average could be a little bit better, right? I mean, trying to make sure as hard as it is to hit.
It's been horrendous. It's been problematic at second. It's been problematic at third. It's been problematic at short. It's been problematic at first. It's been problematic in right, and it's been problematic in left. Literally, we've seen problems at every defensive position other than center field. And even Julio, I'm not going to say it was a bad play, but he knocked a ball over the fence for a home run.
Yeah.
The defense has been atrocious so far this year. The Stars have not played well at all. They have no pop.
Stars? Yeah, Are we talking Stars?
The Stars have not played well. Julio's got no home runs. Cal's got no home runs. Polanco now has one home run. Garver has zero home runs. So the Stars have not played well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you put all of those things together, I guess some of the relievers have been okay. But even the bullpen has not exactly been nailed through the first 10 games of the season. You add it up, and you have a team that's playing very bad baseball through 10 games. No other way to phrase it.
Honestly, as you lay all that out, a beautiful soliloquy, like the fact you're 4-6, you should feel good about yourself. Like,
great.
Yeah, like, okay, we're fine. We're, you know, this is not – you said it, and I said it. Just don't bury yourself in April. Just don't be 8-10 games behind the Rangers, you know, coming out of this month who continue to look red hot. You know, the Astros are a mess. You know, the A's are a mess. The Angels, they're not going to be even a 500 team. Mm-hmm. So just don't fall so far behind the Rangers here in the month of April on the 4-6.
They're kind of hanging in there. And so that's why no one's writing off this season. And that's why we're not saying that, you know, because they've played like dreck for 10 games, it doesn't mean they're going to play that way for the rest of the year. You asked a question, though, Brock, yesterday.
Yep.
And I'm kind of curious which direction you want to take it. Are you asking, of those things that we just mentioned, which is the most concerning moving forward, or which has contributed the most to their lousy start?
Oh, yeah, I think moving forward, because you can't do anything about the past. And what I sent you is to add on to some of these struggles. You're third worst in baseball with 95 strikeouts. You're fourth fewest home runs, hitting just six. You're fourth worst OPS in all of baseball at 5.88. You're 15th in ERA. You're 10th in WHIP. Dylan Moore and Cal have the highest WAR on your team at 0.2. Mm-hmm. Mitch and Julio are at 0.0. JP is negative, and Polanco is at negative 0.5 WAR right now. So of those things added on to your list, what are the most concerning? I don't care about the past. The past is done.
Okay.
You can do nothing about these 10 games. And as we've said, at minus 21 run differential, you're fortunate to be 4-6. So not about the past. Moving this thing ahead, of all of those areas of some concern here in the first 10 games, what concerns you the most?
So I'm going to give you three different types of answers in terms of the way they concern me, if that makes sense. Number one for me, and it may not be that surprising after the way I just spoke about it, is the defense, because I don't think it's going to change significantly.
Correct.
I don't know if it'll be as bad as it's been for the first 10 games, but I don't think this is destined to be a very good defensive club. They made sacrifices in their defense in order to bring in different different types of players offensively, and I think that we're seeing some of the results of that. It's been exaggerated because JP's had a couple of tough moments. Ty's had a couple of tough moments. Guys that you wouldn't ordinarily expect. Yeah. But, oh, by the way, I should throw Sebi Zavala in there because his has been atrocious. They've had major, major problems of defense that go even farther beyond the ones I was expecting them to have. Yeah. So I guess that's my number one concern because I don't think they're going to be very good defensively.
Yeah, and by the way, outs above average, which is probably the best metric right now going in baseball, tip of the cap to our buddy Luke Arkins, who just sent this to me, and appreciate you always, Luke, listening, as does the whole station. The Mariners in outs above average, right? Those outs like, hey, man, here's the average play of everybody in the league, and these are the outs you're missing. You're at minus six. You're 27th in baseball.
The Marlins, that feels a lot more right, doesn't it?
The Marlins are awful. They're winless. They're 30th. The A's are awful. They're 29th. The Pirates are, you know, they're getting by and doing it other ways, obviously, offensively, and you're 27th. Yeah. And that feels right.
That feels a lot more right than fielding percentage.
Correct.
Your defense has been really bad, and I think that's probably the most concerning long term. Number two for me, though, is power. A lack of power.
Mm-hmm.
Brock, you got to hit home runs in today's game.
You do.
You just have to hit home runs.
It's too hard to hit. You have to run into them. You have to run into those runs. It's why
they have six.
You're the only team in baseball that has not scored more than that has not scored six plus runs in a game.
Because you got to hit for power.
Yes.
So, you know, I know strikeouts are going to be high on a lot of people's lists. I'm going to keep arguing with you all about it because I don't care that much about them. I tried to go through it a lot on Friday with some folks that we were discussing it on, and I'm not that worried about it. They struck out 11 times on Saturday. That was their best offensive game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It was the highest strikeout total they had in any of the three games in Milwaukee. They struck out more times Saturday than they did Sunday or Friday. Polanco hit a bomb, and Urias hit a bomb, and you won.
Yep.
Strikeouts are not the problem. They might be an effect, but they're not the cause. And I think the problem is you got to hit more home runs. You got to get on base more with the walks.
The challenge with both of these things is you put these in order. The challenge with both of these things projecting forward, as you said, it's not like you can snap your finger. It's not like the Seahawks and Pete Carroll saying, if we just communicate better, we play better defense.
No,
you don't have the personnel to play better defense. And that's some of the challenge. The strikeouts or the power, Salk, the concern. And I think what I read into, if I'm reading into Scott and some of his comments yesterday, is like, you know, once you see a zero up there, if you're Cal or you're Julio, what do you start doing?
You start pressing.
Chasing some of that, and you start pressing for some of that.
I'm going to say that this one, while it worries me a little bit long term, I don't think they built enough power into this lineup, and I think that's something that was missing when everyone was excited that they were saying, hey, fewer and fewer strikeouts.
Right.
My fear was, well, with strikeouts tends to come pop, and they traded away a lot of pop, and that worries me. But the good news, Julio's going to hit home runs this year.
Mm-hmm.
Cal's going to hit home runs this year.
Mm-hmm.
Polanco's going to have more than one home run this year. Garver's going to hit some home runs this year. Trust me, those things will happen. Those guys have pop. And so while I'm concerned, certainly I think it's a major factor in their poor start, and I am concerned that it's not going to be as good as they need it to be this year, I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was in the first 10
games. Is JP going to hit 18 home runs as he did a year ago?
I don't know that I'm counting on that.
Is Haniger going to get you 20-plus home runs this year?
I don't know whether I'm counting on that either.
Right. And then Rojas, a power position. Ty France, a power position. I mean, those are a couple other spots traditionally in baseball that, you know, those guys are not.
That's not who they are.
Nope.
So I think their power numbers overall will be down. I think that they will be better than they've been in this first 10 games.
Yes.
So that concerns me in that way. And then the last one, Brock, to me, honestly, and I know this sounds ridiculous, starting pitching. That's how you win. This team is built on starting pitching. It's not an accident that in the three quality starts they've had, they've won all three games. Do I need them to be dominant every single game? No. But they need to have better than a 30% record of quality starts. For those who don't know what a quality start is, it is six innings plus three runs or fewer, earned runs or fewer. That is a quality start. The only ones they've had this year were the first Kirby start, the first Gilbert start, and the second start from Bryce Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Three quality starts.
Yep.
So you need to have more of those if you're going to win in today's game. There's no other way to explain it.
Yep.
Certainly for this team to win. I have a text here that says, I want the Mariners, they need to win more 8-5 games and 7-6 games. No, they don't. They just need to win more games. I don't care what the damn score is. Just win the game. And they are built to win a lot more 3-2 games than they are 8-7 games.
Yes, they are.
But you can't win a 3-2 game if your starter gives up five runs.
No, and this will be, you know, just kind of a watch is those starters and how impacted are they by your number one concern.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You did not give up that starting pitching. And again, I made this point last week and I'll continue to make it. And we applauded them for it. Amen. This is the strength. This is the foundation. That Jack Zarenczyk sound that we played, you know, remembering our first, you know, week of our first show 15 years ago, that was Jackie Z's problem, man. It was 1 year is this, 1 year is that, 1 year is this, 1 year is that. And it was just felt like it was all over the place. There was not a, you know, just a sustained, this is the foundation, man. This is the conviction. This is our business plan. This is who we are. This is what we do. And for the Mariners, it is starting pitching. It is elite starting pitching. And you did not give up, even though people wanted Logan and people wanted Bryce and people wanted Wu. And you may have, you know, gotten some level of prospect and some level of bat and some level of power, something back for those guys. You did not deviate from that. The challenge with it, and what I sure hope, is that defense does not affect and impact those guys.
Right.
That they can still make that quality pitch that puts the ball in play and says, that's an out. Instead of, oh my gosh, I can't make that pitch, right? I can't throw to contact here because I don't know if that ball is not right at so-and-so. If that ball is not right at so-and-so, then that ball is in play.
It's amazing how much the pitching and defense has really worked together. As good as they've both been the last few years,
yep.
You see that when one goes, the other can really follow right behind it. And yesterday was a good example. There were a couple of rough plays that couldn't get made. And unfortunately, they then got exacerbated by a pitcher mm-hmm. that just kind of lost it. The mm-hmm. same was true in the Kirby start. The same mm-hmm. was true in the second Luis start.
Correct.
Where there were problems, even in the first start of the year, where there were some issues to defensively in opening night. In all four of those games, there have been like a series of lousy defensive plays
right.
that have then been compounded by lousy pitching that allowed the other team to really
capitalize. Yeah, and if you're just tracking it and following it on the app and it shows like a single to left, or you know, it shows up as a non-error, you're like, oh, it's not that bad. But when you actually watch it and you mm-hmm. see the impact that one play can have on the next play and that one inning can have, right? And the pressure that starts to put on your pitchers and everybody. So
there's some causes for concern. There are some things to be worried about. There's also a lot of evidence and reason to believe that some of the things that have gone wrong for them so far will not continue that much longer.
Nope.
So,
and this park tonight has been a pretty good one for them the last couple of years.
Sure
this
has.
Park in particular tonight for Cal and Julio and some of the guys you walk into, like these guys playing the Masters this week, and they walk onto that course, and there's some of them like Jordan. They're like, I like this place. I like this place.
Go get after it because they're going to need it. They need to start turning this thing around sooner rather than later. All right. Coming up next, it's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for Brock's draft profile today. This is a good one.
A stud.
This is a first round pick, right?
This is a first round pick today.
This is a first round pick. This is a guy that maybe had taken the first round.
We are coming into this thing.
I know.
Like we're rounding into, I think we're like a prospect 13 or so. Like we're rounding into
this. It's time for a first round pick draft profile from Brock. It's coming up next on Brock and Salk.